Texas A&M University Commerce is set to resume its fall semester on Monday, August 24th. With the backdrop of the global COVID-19 pandemic, class offerings range from in-person to online only to a number of hybrid curriculum options. The student experience for commuters and residents alike is going to differ in a number of ways from any previous semester in the school's history. Fall sports have been postponed by the Lone Star Conference out of an abundance of caution for players, coaches, and fans. In-person gatherings are being retooled to comply with the recommendations by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to maintain social distance and to limit community spread of COVID-19. I'm Jared Knight with 88.9 KETR, and I recently sat down with Dr. Mark Rudin, TAMUC president, to learn more about how the fall semester is expected to come together, with the state of Texas continuing to report daily new cases near its high daily mark. My first question is whether the institution is nimble enough to withstand another shutdown should one come this fall.
And the answer is yes. I really think we are. If you look back at our spring semester when we made that decision to go fully online and shut down face-to-face instruction during the initiation of the start of the COVID crisis, we were one of the few schools in Texas that was able to do that and not miss a day. So we have taught so many of our classes already online, and we have a lot of expertise in our faculty. And our faculty have stepped up big time in this. They have demonstrated flexibility and being able to adapt, but while maintaining academic excellence. So I feel very confident that even though we will be entering into this fall semester with a combination of online, high flex, and face-to-face classes, I think we'll be okay if we need to flip the switch and go fully online. I would say this also. I feel so confident in our faculty that, you know, this is rapidly changing. I feel confident that if we needed to flip the switch to online, I think in some cases we could flip the switch back to where we were if the COVID crisis eases off and later on in the fall, whatever that may be. So I think we're set up very well. And I would say much better than a lot of schools.
Does the university have the authority to shut down without an order from the governor's office?
Yes, it's my understanding that we do. I would caveat that, though, saying that it would be in our best interest to check in with the Texas A&M University system to make sure that however we accomplish that is consistent to what their goals and where they want us to go in terms of offering academics at our university. But my understanding is that we don't need permission from the state to do that.
Are you noticing a massive difference in the productivity, the output of the institution as a whole during times where folks are away?
I would not say productivity. I would say, and maybe in some isolated cases, maybe things aren't getting done as quickly as they could get done because you have to arrange Zoom meetings, and then it's a lot easier when you're in person, right? If we, for example, if you and I were going to do this remotely and try to make it happen, we'd have to schedule and so forth. But besides just me coming over here and talking to you, but I think the university faculty and staff have really stepped up, and I think it's important for folks to know that this is a constant work in progress here, right? I would say that we still have faculty and staff that are working remotely. And when the semester starts, we still may have faculty and staff working remotely. I think so many times in the past, this institution has waited from an edict from above, from the president saying, here's what we're going to do. I've tried to take a different approach and delegated that out to the VPs and then eventually to the supervisors and say, you all make that decision. I can't sit here from in the president's perch and say, how am I going to deal with this person that may be in this office over here that may be immunocompromised and this group over here that doesn't? And this is essential over here. I really need to rely on that administrative managerial chain to make those decisions. And Jared, I really do think it's worked out so far. And I hope that will continue, right? I don't want a staff member or a faculty member to come to work if they feel in any way that their health and safety is going to be compromised. We don't want that. We want to get them to campus. We want to do everything we can to make them feel and allow them to do their job in a safe manner. That's a case-by-case call, though. In terms of our faculty, I think we're in a pretty good place right now. And I attribute that in part to our provost, John Humphreys, and associate provost, Ricky Dobbs. I think we did the right approach. Again, we did not hand an edict from above and say, this is going to be the distribution of classes, and here's how we want you to teach your classes. We really went to the deans and the department chairs and the faculty and said, you all figure it out. You know, Jared, if you're scheduled to teach the beginning English class, you need to decide and understand. You want to get back in the classroom? We have some restrictions there, right? We have to limit the number of students in the classroom. But if you feel more comfortable online, then let's pursue that. And we see other schools that their faculty senates are pushing back a little bit, saying, we don't feel comfortable doing what you're asking us to do. We didn't do that. We asked them what they wanted to do, and they responded accordingly and are afforded the opportunity to offer courses in the most health and safety oriented way.
What does the fall look like in terms of a resident student? Students have to wear masks when they're in public spaces, but they don't necessarily have to when they're inside their rooms. What's that dynamic going to be like?
The expectation this fall is that our students that are living in the residence halls are going to be encouraged to wear their face coverings when not in their personal rooms, right? And, you know, we are, it's one thing for Mark Rudin to say, ask the students, we encourage you to do that. I think we're thinking of maybe a better approach is to use this peer-to-peer interaction. Get our Student Government Association involved in this and have them spread the word about the benefits of wearing your face coverings and so forth and have that discussion. Going back to the residence halls, students are also going to be discouraged from leaving the university for the duration of the semester to limit exposure to those they visit elsewhere, and the limited exposure that they may bring back to the residence hall. So that'll be a little bit difficult, but again, the encouragement and have them understand that their actions could impact others, and we need to have that discussion early and often with the students. If a student does leave the residence hall and suspect that they've been exposed to COVID-19, we're going to require that the student report this exposure to a student health center within 24 hours of the suspected exposure to make sure we trace that. We're also looking at common spaces in the residence halls, such as restroom facilities, lobbies, shared kitchens, and so forth. We're looking to make sure that those have reduced or designated furnishings to encourage physical distancing, and will enhance sanitization of those areas also. Finally, students in our, we're going to have this discussion, again, early and often with our students. Students living in residence halls will be prohibited from day or overnight visitors. And that's going to be a little change from what we've done in the past in our residence halls. We cannot take the chance and compromise the health of those around us by inviting people that we don't know where they've been. We feel like we're going to do the best job we can to create a safe environment for our students. Jared, I have no control over that. We have no control over that of outside visitors. And God forbid if they're actually staying overnight, we can't have that in our residence halls. And some folks have asked me, you know, how does individual responsibility play into this plan? You know, we have a reopen plan that is on our website, posted on our website. But a central core tenet of that plan is this whole idea of personal responsibility and the fact that the centerpiece of self-certifying certain things as a faculty, staff, or student. And you'll see in postings on the front of doors across campus in this reopen plan that these individuals are going to have to self-certify that they are not actively infected with the COVID-19 virus, that they do not have a fever, cough, or other symptoms of COVID-19 as listed on the CDC website. They have not been in close contact with anyone known or suspected to have tested positive for COVID-19 in the previous 14 days. And finally, they have not returned from travel or traveled through an area with state or local restrictions that mandate quarantine up the previous 14 days.
Right. I think it's going to be a tall order to ask students not to go home on the weekends. Personally, I have learned not to make plans beyond the next couple of weeks because it's almost invariably going to be just torn apart. We spent a whole lot more time at home than we thought we would.
I know. You know, what's interesting is the question I get all the time is, hey, what is the fall semester going to look like? The answer is, I don't know. I know what it looks like today, when you and I are talking. But you know this as well as I do, Jared, that tomorrow something else could happen. And we take this reopen plan that we have on a website, we throw it out, and we start over. And what, how do we adjust? How do we adapt? I don't know the answer. I know that fall of 2020 is going to look different than fall of 19. How's that for an answer, right? We'll do the best we can. We're asking our faculty, staff, and students to do the best they can to deliver an academic, social, cultural experience for our students in very disrupted times.
The Board of Regents requires incoming freshmen to live on campus. Has that been lifted?
Not to date. No, it hasn't.
So they're going to have to be here.
They continue to be here.
Okay.
Yep. And I would say, you know, going back to what you said about how we do things differently, events and those type of things, we just have to adapt and adjust. You know, another good example will be next Friday, the 21st, I'll be giving the Fall Assembly. And it was, I always look forward to that so much because everyone's back in that Ferguson and there's hundreds of people in there and they're ready to go. We may have 30 people in Ferguson because of social distancing and YouTube Live, the presentation. I'm looking forward to the discussion. I wish it was back to the good old days, right? And then it was so much fun to walk out of that Fall Assembly and see the and be part of the freshman walk. No freshman walk this year because we can't do that. So Judy Sackfield, our interim VP for Student Success and Dean of Students, is working with her team to figure out what do we do to create something on campus, experiences on campus, so the students just don't go to class or online and sit in their rooms. We have to figure that out. It's our challenge to figure that out, and we continue to work on that. I think the best thing we have to offer right now, and again, there's still a lot of discussion going on about fall sports moving to the spring. I think that a good part of this is that the NCAA is allowing us to grant those athletes another year of eligibility if they don't play a full season. So that's a very positive thing. I have to be honest with you, and you didn't ask me this question, Jerry, but I'm going to tell you. Anyway, this is the world according to Mark, okay? So this is not the LSC presidents or anyone else. But as I sit here today, I'm not fully convinced that things are going to significantly change for the spring, that we're going to be able to have sport competitions in the spring either, right? I mean, think about it. The data still is rising in a number of different areas, and it'll start coming down. We hope, keep your fingers crossed, the curve will start to bend and level off. But because it goes down, that doesn't mean there's no new cases. That means there's fewer new cases. That doesn't mean there's less morbidity or death. It could be. I take that back. It could be less death. But still, unfortunately, deaths that occur.
Non-zero,
right?
Yeah,
non-zero. And then you think about, you know, the flu season that's coming up, and you're going to introduce a whole new population of, by virtue of the flu, immunocompromised individuals that are going to be dealing with this also. I don't see this idea of, let's move sports to the spring, and we'll flip that switch to January 1 and play ball. I guess I don't see that right now. Maybe into April, maybe in that area. I'll continue to hold out hope for that, but we'll do everything we possibly can at A&M Commerce to get our student athletes back out in the field of competition that they've been preparing for their entire life.
We're talking with Texas A&M University Commerce President Dr. Mark Rudin on 88.9 KETR about how student life and the day-to-day operation of the institution is expected to be markedly different as the fall semester begins in late August. We're talking about the steps that are being taken to conduct the business of higher education while attempting to keep stakeholders safe and healthy until something resembling normalcy returns.
Will there be a vaccine? Will it be effective? I don't know. You know, you hear some experts that say this is going to be with us forever, and that, you know, just much like the flu, you're going to have to get your COVID-19 annual vaccination and maybe a cocktail of vaccinations. We may not be able to get to 100%, but boy, in fall of 21, I would love to have a fall assembly with everyone there and the students participate in the fall freshman walk. That would be so neat, but we can't do that this year. So let's do the best we can.
Many of the students who are enrolled here are on some form of athletic scholarship.
No.
Are those students going to continue to benefit from those athletic scholarships, even if their fall sports are being canceled or delayed?
We are going to do our absolute best to honor all those scholarships. Because even though we've canceled competition, there is still hope. And the LSC presidents did in our vote say, even though we may be pushing competitions back in some sports to the spring, we're still going to allow practices to start no earlier than August 24th. So we will have football, soccer, and volleyball practices start in that time. So the teams will still be conditioning, still will be practicing. So I don't see any scenario where we would pull those scholarships.
People are coming up to you. I know they do. You live on campus. People are coming up to you, and they're asking you questions. What's the tone? Are people hopeful? Are they, you know, are they sort of stuck in the realism of it? You know, what's the tone?
Yeah. You know, there's looks like there's two camps in this whole discussion, Jared. There are faculty, staff, and students. And let me talk about the students for a second. There are students that I want to get back to campus. How do I get back to campus? I want to see my friends. I want to go to class. Even though those classes are online, I want to sort of hang out with my buds at school. But the other camp is the prospective students and their parents or guardians that are waiting to see what happens. We're only about a little bit over a week out from the first day of classes, but we still have a significant number of prospective and particularly freshmen that still have not made that decision. And mom and dad, we're finding out more and more that mom and dad are probably, if not the decision maker, are playing a big role in that. Do they want their son or daughter to be going back to school in this semester? Or do they want to see the coast clearer and then maybe come back in fall of 21? We have probably close to 1,000 kids that are in that camp right now, and they're going to go one way or another, right? And I've just told our folks that if they want to come here, let's accommodate them. If they want to put it off for a year, let's still have that discussion and see how do we, because we want those individuals to pursue their career. So a lot of jittery people out there. I would say, given everything that this university has been through in the past year, and especially COVID, I just looked at our enrollment numbers for the fall. Again, comparing where we are right now in 20 versus where we are, we're at this date in 19. Looks like our enrollment numbers are flat. I'll take that, given what I hear coming out of a lot of schools, and our student credit hours, which how we are funded. Right now, we're actually in the middle of the census time period where we receive our formula number. And we're funded by student credit hour. And actually right now, we are up about over 3% in student credit hours, which is a good thing. And during the summertime, this past summer, summer session one, again, we were in the middle of saying, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And we're still doing some homework on this, trying to mine this information out, because I got to be honest with you, we don't know why. But in summer session one, our headcount was up 21% and our student credit hours was up 27%, which is amazing, right? Why did everyone go right from spring semester into graduate work in the summer? I don't know yet.
How does A&M Commerce obtain the latest data with regard to students, faculty, or staff members who may have received positive COVID-19 diagnoses? And how and to what extent is that data being communicated to the campus community?
You know, your first question about how do we collect that data, it's a two-pronged approach. We need self-disclosure. And now we have testing set up on our campus and free testing for our faculty, staff, and students. But we're using these tests that we have graciously received from the system office to test symptomatic individuals, to do some surveillance testing, and test special groups. So let's say that there is someone tests positive in the West Wing of Phase 3. We may go there, do a little contact tracing, and say we need to test you other five people. So it's a combination of us being able to have the testing capability and self-disclosure. And we made the decision long ago that we are going to be fully transparent on what's going on our campus. And we are going through the process now of finalizing this. We're going to post on campus, we're going to post the number of COVID cases for our faculty, staff, and students on our website. We're posting the number of positive COVID cases on our website. You can go to our main website and you can click on the link of Stay Healthy Lions. And if you follow that link, it'll take you to how many faculty, staff, and students are currently tested positive.
And that's separated, too, by on-campus and off-campus, depending on, I mean, the relationship to the institution is how they got there, but they may not be on campus.
Right, and it could get complicated pretty quick, right? Because I can tell you right now, last time I looked at it, we have no on-campus cases, but we have four off-campus cases. Okay, and we have four off-campus, but one of those was living on campus, got it, and decided to go home and spend, you know, go home with mom. And so it's no longer on campus, right? So there's a lot of intricacies there, but we just felt like the value was in expressing the magnitude of the issue on campus, off campus, 4 versus 50, right? I think it's, we need to be fully transparent and let our campus community know exactly what's going on our campus. And it'll further help us make these decisions about, okay, who needs to be on campus? Who's comfortable on campus? How do we accommodate? Do we start flipping the switch? I mean, what's that, you know, how do we move that forward? So I think this transparency is going to be the way to go.
Is contact tracing happening within the context of campus?
Yes,
if somebody here is charged with that.
Yes, it is. We have the Vice Chancellor for Health Services at the Texas A&M University system. Has graciously offered contact tracing expertise. We have contact tracing currently going on by our own personnel. So I think together, contact tracing is going to be a big part of our COVID portfolio here.
Dr. Rudin, I appreciate your time.
I appreciate your time. It's always good talking to you. Love to come back. Love to come back in mid-fall and say, give a status and how's it going? Right. Yeah, I just come here with my hair all frazzled and sweat. I don't know what I'm doing here.
I'll say this. It is absolutely, though, refreshing and calming for somebody like me to hear you say that you have no idea what the future is going to look like. It's up in the air. We don't know.
I'll tell you this. One of the pleasant surprises that we've experienced over these 6 months is the support and help from our system office. They have issued a number of guidance memos that have been extremely helpful. But I'll tell you what's been even more helpful than that, Jared, is that they have also been willing to communicate and talk to us, and they don't have all the answers. They know we don't have all the answers. We're in the trenches together. We're pounding this, you know. There's something to be said about the system office saying, we don't have the answers, but let's figure out how we put our heads together and make it work. That is so comforting to know in its own way, right? I can't speak more highly of the leadership and all the offices within our Texas A&M University system office. They have stepped up big time in this, and I don't think we'd be okay, but I think we're that much farther ahead as a university because of that support.
Dr. Mark Rudin is the president and CEO of Texas A&M University Commerce. This conversation is archived online at ketr.org. For KETR News, I'm Jared Knight.